Coming up on KUCB News, state legislators visited Unalaska last week to hear about the island's needs. And some of Alaska's U.S. representatives are using social media to promote vaccination against COVID-19. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Maggie Nelson with some local news on Monday, August 2nd, 2021. A group of legislators visited Unalaska last week. Politicians from the state Senate and House, plus representatives from the Department of Transportation and the governor's office, spent about 24 hours in town. KUCB's Theo Greenlee reports that the trip provided an opportunity to see firsthand the issues facing the island and to meet the people of the nation's top fishing port.
The legislators had an action-packed itinerary. Arrive in Dutch Harbor on the morning plane, discuss the airport extension master plan, see the conditions on Captain's Bay Road, and visit the various docks and harbors of America's largest fishing port. Piece of cake. Mayor Vince Tudyakov Sr. helped show them around to demonstrate the city's needs.
Yeah, it was a great tour. They seemed to really enjoy the opportunity to see what Unalaska has as a community.
The tour culminated on Thursday evening at a community reception in the Grand Aleutian Hotel, where Unalaskans had the chance to speak to lawmakers directly and to tell them what was on their mind. Blaine Shishnikov is the president of the Kowalungan tribe of Unalaska. He said the reception was a good opportunity to discuss the community's infrastructure needs.
I would just really like them to understand what a unique island that we live on, our community, how strong our community is, and some better services that can be brought to the number one fishing port.
Unalaska has many service needs at the moment. An airport expansion, getting broadband to the island, and paving Captain's Bay Road, to name a few. But one issue that came up several times at the reception was the permanent fund. Lawmakers will go into a special legislative session later this month to work out the details of the PFD that they failed to figure out last session. Representative Bryce Edgman says it comes down to choosing between community services and PFD payments to Alaskans.
But that fundamental question is how much of those earnings from the permanent fund should go towards those core services and how much should go towards paying the permanent fund dividend. That's the issue that we're grappling with. I think we're all here to be eyes and ears and to get your perception and get your thoughts and your feelings.
Unalaska's Vice Mayor Dennis Robinson stepped up to the podium Thursday night to tell the representatives that state services were more important to him than receiving a hefty PFD.
I think the health of the dividend of the permanent fund is more important than getting a full dividend, because that would destroy it. And I just want to place my support for the legislature getting the work they need to get done along with the governor and get whatever dividend that we can get while sustaining a healthy permanent fund for the future for our children and great grandchildren.
Another big issue that kept coming up is transportation. Ferry service has dwindled over the past few years, and the Tustamina is already down to one stop in Unalaska per month. House Speaker Louise Stutes wasn't exactly reassuring about the Marine Highway's future.
They're important. The service will never be what it used to be in the past. What we are working on is creating a sustainable, dependable service. If you have to have less service, so be it, if you can depend on it.
So Department of Transportation Commissioner John McKinnon agrees, but he says the ferry's future is more an issue of supply and demand.
And one thing that we've looked at is what the travel demand is, and match that with frequency of service and number of ships operating, and that's really the challenge. The ridership in the system has declined since about 1997 at a very steady rate, even though from 97 to 2005 we added four more ships to the system. Ridership, both vehicles and passengers, continued to decline. So there's other factors in there.
McKinnon and the other representatives visited the airport and Captain's Bay Road, both of which are major city projects. The nearly $54 million Captain's Bay Road project has been a primary concern for Unalaskans. City Manager Aaron Reinders says the legislators were able to see the needs firsthand.
And really, I'm telling you, the trucks were on cue. I mean, everything was perfect. I mean, it was everything that we had talked about at lunch, you know, just the transportation challenges there and, you know, Dead Man's Curve and the pedestrian conflicts there with the traffic, the dust and the noise.
It can be difficult to communicate the needs of rural Alaska to lawmakers who spend much of their time in cities like Juneau or Anchorage. But Senator Lyman Hoffman, a Democrat from Bethel, says it's getting better.
Urban areas have gotten a better understanding of the problems that people in rural Alaska face. You know, in the past we had, in the 80s and early 90s, we had urban-rural divide. It was very evident. Today, until this last bout with power cost equalization, I would say that we've had a great working relationship with urban Alaska. And I feel that we are going to resolve the power cost equalization question. We are going to resolve the permanent fund dividend equation as well. And then I think we will be in a better place to work as one state.
Time will tell. Legislators are scheduled to enter the special session on August 16th. Unalaskans can still make their voices heard. Residents are invited to make comments to the Comprehensive Fiscal Plan Working Group in advance of the start of the special session. The public may call in tonight, Monday, August 2nd at 6 p.m. You can find the phone number and email address to share public testimony on our website at kucb.org. In Unalaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
Unalaskans will no longer receive utility credits from the Power Cost Equalization Program. Governor Mike Dunleavy recently allowed funds from the PCE program to be swept into the state's general funds, leaving the PCE unfunded. City officials say Unalaska residents will not see a PCE credit on their utility bill when they receive the bill this month. The billion-dollar state program is designed to help offset the high costs of energy production in Alaska areas, like Unalaska, where remote geographic location makes generating electricity expensive. According to the city, the average residential utility consumer can expect to pay about $430 more over the course of a year without the PCE credit. City officials say they are continuing to advocate for the restoration of the PCE fund. Meanwhile, the State Health Department reported Friday that three Alaskans died of COVID-19 as the state had its 10th straight day of case counts over 200. Health Department data shows two of the deaths occurred in July, while the third happened in May, before the latest surge in cases triggered by the highly contagious Delta variant. About 100 people are hospitalized with COVID across the state, up sharply from May, when about 20 people were hospitalized. Hospitalizations peaked last winter at over 150. The new cases move several regions of Alaska into risk levels at which the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends masking in indoor public settings. The only regions where levels remain below the CDC threshold for masking are the Bristol Bay, Haines, Skagway, and Petersburg boroughs. Alaska Congressman Don Young and U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski are using their social media channels to promote vaccination against COVID-19 as infections and hospitalizations surge again.
There's much misinformation out there, so I'll be very clear in my position. These shots are safe, effective, and they cost you nothing.
Early in the pandemic, Young played down the threat, calling it the beer virus. But for months, he's been urging Alaskans to get the shot. He survived a COVID infection last fall that sent him to the hospital. Last week, with the highly contagious Delta variant on the rise in Alaska, Young has ramped up the message with an urgent video on social media and email.
I think it's crucially important. I urge you to do this. As I've done, I got it vaccinated. I believe it works. I know it works. I want you to do the same thing for Alaska and yourselves.
Murkowski's vaccine promotion video is adamant and all of 13 seconds. It's filmed in her office and begins with her removing a mask with the Alaska flag on it.
I do not want to go back to mask wearing inside, and I know you don't either. So get the vaccine.
Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan is not outspoken on the subject. His social media channels don't feature videos promoting the vaccine. In response to an inquiry, Sullivan's office issued a statement that says vaccination is an individual's choice and not up to the government. Sullivan's statement says, quote, "I encourage Alaskans to strongly consider getting the vaccine," end quote. And it also says that Sullivan is vaccinated. Researchers have identified the killer whale that beached itself on Prince of Wales Island Thursday and later freed itself. Now, the team behind the identification explains why the process of naming and identifying whales is so important. KRBD's Molly Lubers has the story.
T-146D. That's the name of the killer whale that was recently live-stranded on Prince of Wales Island. It may not roll off the tongue, but that identifier is significant, says killer whale researcher Jared Towers.
It allows us to keep track of the whale after the stranding, and that may be among the most important parts of identifying animals like this.
The whale hasn't been spotted since it freed itself on Thursday, or at least no one has seen it and identified it as T-146D again. But Towers says the documentation matters. He works for Canada's Department of Fisheries and Oceans and is also part of a team of researchers called Bay Cetology. He led a team that compiled a photo identification catalog of West Coast transient orcas, also known as Biggs killer whales.
There's over 300 of them. They're the ones that are typically seen from Alaska and further south down to the lower 48 off the west coast of North America.
The man who identified the beached orca is Towers' colleague, Gary Sutton. Sutton says the eye patch of the whale was fairly distinctive, alerting him that might be T-146D.
It's got a big kind of hook on the front and comes in. It sets her apart from a lot of the rest.
But to be sure, he says he checked multiple photos of the whale against the catalog. Though he used feminine pronouns to refer to T-146D, he says the gender isn't confirmed. It's mostly a guess based on the shape of the whale. But he says that they do know it's 13 years old. As for whether it will survive in the long term, there are some good signs pointing that direction, says Sutton.
I was fairly optimistic because of the way it looked and the fact that there wasn't a significant amount of blood in the tide pool below it and seemed to be in good health.
That said, contrary to some posts on social media, NOAA Fisheries says they have not confirmed if the whale has rejoined its pod. But Tower says there's a good track record of this species surviving the live strandings. Before this most recent stranding, he says five individuals from this population had been documented live stranded over the last 20 years. All of them survived the initial stranding, he says, and four are still alive, as far as they know.
They've all rejoined their families after stranding, and they've all gone on to survive and live normal, healthy lives. And the only reason we know that is because their identities were documented when they were stranded and their identities were further documented.
Towers says there are several kinds of killer whales along the West Coast, but all the live stranding events were Biggs killer whales, which he says like to hunt harbor seals in shallow waters.
I don't think anyone knows exactly when this whale stranded or what those circumstances were, but I would make a wager that there was harbor seal hunting as the motivating factor.
Still, there's a lot unknown about T-146D, including exactly why it stranded. But because it's been identified, there's a good chance that the killer whale could be documented again, and researchers will know if it survived in the long term too. But no update on a snappier name. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Molly Lubers.
KUCB is hosting its annual Tundra Golf Classic this weekend on August 7th and 8th in Pyramid Valley. There is still room for teams to sign up for tee times. Please call 581-1888 or email info@kucb.org to sign up for a time slot before they fill up. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Maggie Nelson, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org. And please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.